This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. The Trade Association of VIXA is running a series of digital signage power hours that are designed much more as roundtable discussions than webinars. I've been moderating them, and while they're available for playback on demand via VIXA's YouTube channel, it's a conversation that works well as just audio. This session was on the new demands out there for technology-driven access controls and messaging for retailers and other venue operators who are slowly reopening to a new normal. I stripped out the presentation the guys from Invitus did at the front end of the hour, since they do refer to visuals. This is the conversation which featured Beth Warren from CRI, Jay Leedy from Diversified, Ben Reynolds from Stratacache, Chuck Lewis from Polymer Digital Group, and Florian Rotberg and Stefan Schieker from Invitus. Enjoy. I write about digital signage all the time. For the last several years, I have heard all kinds of vendors and market analysts, everybody else, talk about customer experience and how important customer experience is. And now when I go out shopping, I'm seeing hacks everywhere. Pylons, sheets of cardboard, shopping carts put in the way of things to block entrances and so on. And Beth, I'm curious from your perspective, and take yourself off of mute. Awesome. I love those little icons to show that. Yeah, there you go.
Here I am.
How are retailers looking at all this, all these challenges that they now face in terms of limiting the number of people coming in? I mean, I'm seeing cashiers working now as bouncers outside of Home Depots and things like that. They can't possibly see this as a long-term solution.
You know, I think that it's very evident when retailers aren't thinking through how to choreograph and coordinate this on site. I'm very impressed by the way some of the essential retailers have handled themselves, namely Trader Joe's and Whole Foods. If the group is familiar with those important grocery outlets, they have really taken deliberate effort to stage an entrance to recast the journey so that not only is there social distancing or shopper distancing, but that the things that you really like about shopping are still kept intact. So a little surprise and delight, a little impulse here and there. Because in this time, people are way more concerned with getting in and getting out quickly. You know, it's not a browsing mindset. It is a mission mindset. So the stores that are gearing their inventory, their presentation of merchandise, and their signage, and their technology for that matter, they're going to really deliver, I think, on the CX, on customer experience, and making sure that that is consistent from location to location, because that's what breeds confidence and comfort.
Right.
And Dave, just to add, in the past was all about, you know, improving dwell time. You know, we wanted to spend as much time as possible. Now it's all about, you know, how fast can you get people through?
Absolutely.
That's really frustrating. For the past year, we've built all these experiences and, you know, in these great zones with sofas and great ambient and everything.
That's right. It was about as fast slowing down, right? It was once about slowing them down and holding their attention, but now it's about getting them through and getting that list done and taking shortcuts and hacks to make sure that they're getting their essential needs and getting out as quickly as they came in. And that's how we're adding value, and that's how retailers are adding value.
And the really good solutions are flexible enough to make this transition back and forth.
Absolutely.
Really, for now, it's all about speeding up, but we will see times again when dwell time becomes more important. So that's why we like the solutions that actually can be used flexibly. So now just moving people through, later on you show different stories on the screens and you tell different stories to keep people in the store and to get back that feeling of having an experience in the store.
You know, one thing I'd like to see a little bit more of, which I'm surprised I haven't as much as I expected to, is with all the curbside pickup happening, the connection between buy online, pickup in store, and buy online, pickup at curbside. So BOPIS and BOPUC. And what is the digital, what is the relationship with digital to getting, you know, that flagged and signed and people driving up and packing and going? I haven't seen that frictionless handoff as much as I would like. So I feel like that's an area that retailers can I think maybe focus on to really upgrade, because that will actually help throughput in general and just, you know, connect online and offline in a more seamless way.
Mm-hmm. Jay, and you're on mute as well, Jay. There you go.
Not anymore.
There you go. Both CRI, Best Company, and your company, Diversified, have had new products that have come out recently that are all about access control and things like thermal sensors. That's introducing technology and somewhat, I don't want to say invasive because that's definitely not the right term, but it's somewhat disruptive into your normal thing that you do when you walk into a store or to a public building. What's the thinking around that? And does that, do you really have to kind of manage the experience that all of a sudden you feel like you're entering a facility instead of a store?
Yeah, I think all of it, in our view, centers around communication at the end of the day and conveying a sense of confidence and a degree of security that there's a measure initially that's being taken as people move into spaces, whether it's to their own work environment, into a retail environment, and tying into a number of other mechanisms that enable that to be potentially automated so that people can more confidently move into space without bouncers at the door, without this kind of more intimidating type of environment, which is a bit disruptive and feels uncomfortable. Mm. And I think that's where, you know, as Florian and Stefan had illustrated, there's a lot of opportunity to kind of reprogram the customer to going into a retail environment as well as to employees going into spaces. I see these kind of broadening out to, you know, certainly transportation facilities where, you know, we're looking more and more towards integrated control systems, whether it's access control or just throughput and flow control that can help to, you know, enable some social distancing automatically without people having to kind of go around and essentially be hall monitors at the end of the day. And mm-hmm. that's really what kind of how we're positioning the solutions that that we're exploring is really this is, you know, the beginning of or a complement to an existing communication strategy that may be already in place and really just, you know, and another digital signage endpoint at the end of the day.
Right. Ben, your company Stratacash and one of the companies, the group of companies, Walkbase, that you spend a lot of time with, is the integration side of this really important, that you've got different systems that are kind of stitched together, as opposed to what I'm seeing in a lot of the emails that come in every day are things, very individual products, and you just put this thing in and you're done. And that doesn't strike me, particularly for any kind of a larger building or retailer, that one little thing is going to solve the problem. There's more to it.
Yeah, I would agree, Dave. I think there's a couple things, the way to think about that. You know, is think about it, is how can we use tech and data to make a better customer experience, and how can we value the customer's time? Beth mentioned the order online, pick up in store. Well, that's going crazy right now in grocery and also in the QSR business. I mean, their drive-through has always been big here in North America, but their delivery business has shot up and things like that. So how are they managing all that stuff? And being able to tie that together. So imagine, you know, just using data and thinking of the consumer is like, I can tie that data to a digital screen, make it very friendly at the entrance, but I could also use that API or data stream to a mobile device and think about, hey, you know, my Home Depot, my local Home Depot looks like it has, it's close to occupancy or it's got a 10-minute wait. that'd be great information for me as a customer, right? But for me to manage my time. And imagine if every retailer did that, or Jay talked about transportation. If, as we get back to travel, manage, if I'm just in an airport lounges and I know, you know, how many people are in an airport lounge at any given time, you know, I can manage, I can help them manage occupancy and things like that. So it's using things to tie it together. So you're, you know, you've got things, to your point, Dave, you got things like counters, you got things like sensors, you got things, screens, you obviously the cloud, you've got a lot of different integration points, and it's a solution that I think as folks start to think about it, and to Florian's point before, it's I think it's going to be well beyond just the next 3 months in terms of how they use this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Chuck, Chuck, for your company, you make custom enclosures, all kinds of different enclosures. A lot of the outdoor stuff has been around wayfinding and street furniture, that sort of thing. Are you seeing that demand shift as to best point around curbside pickup and information that has to be pushed outside of a store to inform people? That are you hearing from customers wanting that sort of thing now?
Well, yeah, we've seen as a company in whole, we've seen an uptick in outdoor specifically. Dave, would you say? Funny you'd mention that. We had a conversation just today with some end users where a lot of the restaurants are starting to prepare for next month to reopen. And I think all of us know right now that geographically, it doesn't matter where you're at in the United States, they're going to have about 25% capacity. So as the summer months come, people are going to go outside, they're going to want to go to the restaurants. Where do they sit while they wait to be called? We've been asked by many, many people, many, many end users and partners, hey, do you have a solution for outdoor to show the menu at a restaurant, for example, with speakers where they can be called? Like that was a conversation we had a couple of weeks ago, and it actually has become a real product. So something that at one point never existed has now become something that's brand new to us.
Mm. Chuck, that's really interesting, because over here in Europe, you need to register now. You have to register with your name and your email address when you go to a restaurant, so they can, you know, they can trace you if somebody got sick or so afterwards. And so you need these digital touch points. And even printed menus are in some parts of the country not allowed anymore in restaurants. So you need to digitize them. So it's really about connecting. It's all about online and offline. So it's not only about putting outdoor totems, which is nice, but it's not all about it. It's always a mix of having something on your mobile system and on your mobile phone, having, you know, screens there, and making the best out of the waiting time. That's really, really important. Yeah.
There's that omni-channel word again.
I was just going to say, right? You know, we're seeing a huge spike in the interest in driving phone or driving screens that have traditionally been touch or may have other interactive components through QR codes that can be driven through a personal device. We're really seeing the potential for adoption of personal devices becoming a remote control to the world now, with a lot of technologies that already have that embedded to enable that, as well as you know, potentially a rise in adoption of gestural technologies as well through LIDAR or stereoscopic cameras, in which, you know, we very quickly figured out a language in communicating with our phones through touch because of the iPhone and, you know, the slew of devices that came after that. Those same kind of form languages, I would say, are likely going to rapidly increase in gestural interaction technologies as well.
And funny enough, people are scared of touching public screens, but they never clean their own phones.
So true. Somehow the device is just an extension of you, and it's as clean as I am, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But hopefully you don't take it to the shower.
Exactly. But I agree that personal navigation tool is going to be critical. And we will see more of that for sure.
And over here, we see increasingly also scheduling apps. And as you referred to, Ben, earlier, it's not only showing, Home Depot's nearing capacity, but also really to be able to make appointments at a store.
Booking ahead of time.
You can go there and then have a time slot where you can enter the store. Absolutely. And you don't have to wait in line. And these kinds of solutions, not for all the stores, but for some stores, this really makes sense. And it's really making smart use of your mobile phone then.
I had a question from one of the listeners about, is this a situation where you have a lot of manufacturers and vendors, solution providers, introducing products and looking for problems to solve? Or are you hearing from your customers that we have a problem, please help us, and that's where these products are coming from when it comes to things like access control?
We have heard from customers that, you know, especially the labor savings and this being, you know, for the bigger customers, we're having the staff folks at the entities, you know, being able to do that more automatically is a potential, because they see that as a potential savings. And then all the benefits you get of communication, customer experience and things like that. But it's, you know, we started down this path when our customers started kind of asking, hey, can you help us address this solution?
It strikes me as it's challenging for some of the things like what Florian and Stefan were describing with these digital A-frames, which are very simple sensors. How do you deal with larger environments like a bank, like a big box store with multiple entrances, and start to read the actual density in the store? Because I'm seeing things even at a Home Depot where you have somebody with a walkie-talkie talking to somebody else with a walkie-talkie saying, two people just left, you can let two people in. This seems really labor intensive. And you got to think, with computer vision and AI, machine learning and cameras and everything else, got to be a better way. But at the same time, it can't be a $250,000 solution either.
No, but there, exactly. And we often look at what kind of installed base is there already. You know, do they have cameras already? You can use existing cameras and try to connect the data. Obviously, you need to, even the digital A-frames, which are mostly used over here, they all connect to a cloud. And you have, if you have many entrances, you know, you obviously need to count all of them. But to be honest, most of retailers currently use only one entrance and one exit, just to make it easier for various reasons, because not always technology works in the beginning, and it's still, you know, the startup phase something. And it's also an issue about, you know, compliance and GDPR, because we have one question here about GDPR in regards to that. And GDPR is a privacy law over here in Europe. It's similar to what you have in California, and some other states are adopting similar things. And it's a huge topic. It's a big, big challenge. And to be honest, most of the solutions we see are borderline case if they're GDPR compliant or not. But in the beginning, you know, the government said, just start with it. Very untypical of us in German, because usually we don't do it the other way around. But now it's really start something, and then we have to find. So this lunchtime, we went to a restaurant that had one open book, so everyone had to sign in and his email address and everything. You could see all the addresses, all the information for all the other guests. Obviously, that wasn't GDPR compliant. But these are things which would change. So with some simple hardware, you know, some iPads or some touch screens or so. So it's evolving. But yes, it plays a huge matter.
Mm-hmm. If you're a solutions provider, do you have to think about the liability issues of this? If you're saying, you know, we've got this thermal scanner, we've got this other device that's going to check whether people have masks, is there any kind of a liability risk to a restaurant operator or a solutions provider for saying, hey, we have this, use this, and then somebody gets missed and they get inside and they infect the whole store or whatever?
I can take that.
Somebody in North America maybe can answer that, because over here in Europe, yes.
Yeah, I'll take a first stab at it in saying that, you know, as we've been talking to our clients extensively over the last several weeks, we're very careful to say this is, you know, especially where a thermal scanner is a component as a first line measure, that this is one of multiple measures that will need to be considered with our client stakeholders as a return to work strategy or reopening their businesses. It's not a silver bullet. There's additional courses of action that need to be considered to be 100% safe. And, you know, that can entail using specialized cleaning solutions that are antipathogen or antibacterial. It can entail, you know, secondary protocols with respect to, you know, a reading that is out of acceptable range, and considering ambient conditions or where the person's coming from. If they're coming from a workout facility, for example, and may show an elevated temperature. So all those things need to be kind of put into place and thought about really as a holistic solution, with, you know, some of these solutions being one of a component of those. And we're really trying to be careful in helping to guide our customers towards those considerations.
We guide our clients. We suggest that they spend their time thinking about their secondary or their escalation protocols. So if someone doesn't pass the temperature screening, that there is a very clear process in what happens next. How are they handled? What is the sensitivity measures? What is the level of discretion? You know, where are they handled? How are they, you know, sort of cordoned off and treated with respect? Because really, this is about clearing the majority of people so that we signal that this place is safe to enter and that everybody who has come through is safe to enter. You know, it's a safe place to enter and dwell.
Chuck, you wanted to answer?
Yeah. Excuse me. So many of you probably have seen a lot of the stuff that we got out there. Mm-hmm. Several different designs of temperature testing kiosks. But to your point, Dave, it's gotten to the point where you've got to be very clear to the end user and, you know, the buyers exactly what to expect from an IR sensor. I mean, this isn't a be-all, tell-all. It's not going to find everything. And we actually have gotten to the point where we have a separate document that we send to clients literally explaining how IR sensors work and the differences between standard temperature taking, like in your mouth or your armpit, for example, and IR sensors, because we all know if you're in a parking lot 100 yards away and it's 30 degrees outside, you walk in the door, you're going to be cold, even though you may have a fever, but 5 minutes later, it's going to show a fever. So it's absolutely necessary for the end user to understand IR technology in terms of measuring body temperature, but then it's very necessary to have a step two. And something we've actually started to educate our clients on how to do.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
I had a question. How important is it to make new technology compatible with legacy equipment like access pass printing, gate door opening, that sort of thing?
Very.
All right, next question.
Very.
And that fits with the next question, you know, why would the company invest in the cloud service to address it, you know, when they use it only for a few weeks? It won't be temporary. We believe it will be at least a year, probably longer than that.
Totally.
Unfortunately, we fear, you know, things like COVID-19 or COVID-20 or 21, whatever it's called then, you know, we'll come back. Unfortunately, Dave, I know we don't like it, but the chances are there. So we need to be prepared. And all the digital stuff we talk about, it has always dual use. So if we don't have COVID-19 anymore, you know, you can use it just for promotions or other things. You have other actions or so. So it's really about this dual use. And
plug and play.
€1,000, you know, or dollars, you know, after a year, that's fine, you know. So it's anywhere written off that.
You know, Dave, it's really about what we found, the software-based tool. Even though PDG is not a software-based company, we partner with some of the best. Matter of fact, I've seen some of their names pop up on the bottom here. And to your guys' point, we've been asked, and we are currently producing some orders where we have barcode scanners that we put into the side of our kiosk and opens up the door. We have real-life screens on the opposite side of glass, for example, where the host can see in real life what's going on with the person taking their temperature. Turnstiles, can you scan a badge and open up a turnstile? All of these questions have been asked, and our software partners can absolutely customize and do all of this. So it's very important.
Ben, you were on to make a point?
Yeah, the only point I was going to make was two points. One is Florian mentioned it, but the counting solutions have been around for 10 plus years in terms of just managing traffic. So it's really taking that data and using it for a different use case, and hopefully this case. So I think it's imperative that we, you know, you look at this at historical stuff. I also think once you have it in the cloud, then now you're able to connect it to the mobile device, you know, to get some of these user experiences as we all think it's going to be more prevalent. So I think there's a real opportunity there to go forward once that happens.
The point, I think you can use the sensor data for all different sorts of purposes. Store analytics is one of the big topics, or was one of the big topics even before the crisis, and it will be a topic also after the crisis. So investment in this kind of technology and sensor technology will help you running your business also in the future, even if you don't show the actual numbers of people in your store on a screen at the entrance. But it's, I'm for calculating conversion rates, all of this kind of stuff. You need the sensor technology that's also being used now for access control.
And all of your historical data is useless nowadays because everything has changed. All the data, it's not useless, but all the experience you have and everything, all the operations, everything which worked for the past 10 to 20 years, you know, many of this stuff, you know, you need to rethink and do differently now. And that's so important to collect as much data as possible where it makes sense, obviously, and get some more actual insight on this.
I would imagine if you are a end user, as a retailer or somebody runs some sort of a large facility, you're listening to this and thinking, this is awesome, but I no longer have any budget, or I have very tightened budgets because of everything that's going on and the lack of sales that we're doing, whatever it may be. How significant of a investment is this? And I'm curious, as folks who all sell stuff, have budgets dried up, or is this just something that people who run these kinds of businesses know they have to find the money for if they want to reopen?
I can take that as a first step. So we are seeing that capital is constrained because of the situation that everybody finds themselves in. And so as a result of that, the manufacturers that are bringing these to market find their own capital constrained. We're finding that a number of clients are interested in finance options, whether it's operating leases or as a service options. The as a service option is really interesting because, as I said, at the end of the day, we see this as being, you know, a digital signage endpoint that should live in the environment as a part of a corporate communication strategy or other communication strategy. So, you know, what then beyond the initial purpose of considering these devices and these solutions? How are you going to iterate and how are you going to keep them relevant for, you know, what becomes our new normal downstream and hopefully sooner rather than later? As a service enables for incremental services to be added from content creation to, you know, day 2 support packages, professional services, and that can be incrementally over the life of that subscription service. So we're finding that that's really attractive for a number of our clients.
Beth?
We are finding that when we pair our product with a digital signage piece, that bundle actually is adding value right then and there, because not only is it providing an opportunity to temperature check, clear people safely, but it provides end users with an automatic way to communicate that it's a safe space, whether it's the cleansing or cleaning regimen or the mask policy or the staffing policy or any number of content elements that reassure the general public or even the employees that the place is being watched and that it's carefully attended to. That's what drives confidence. It really does.
Got a question about what model of headset am I
watched
using? question from Allison. I don't even know. I think it's Sennheiser anyways.
But Dave, people seem to be willing to pay for it. You know, there wasn't any really pushback. We haven't seen pushback with, why do I need digital?
Right.
Quite the opposite. It was, what? That makes a lot of sense. Because then I know that alerts that are going to, you know, the person who's on the receiving end of a elevated temperature is also going to be able to then make sure that on the opposite of that, that, you know, communicating to the lobby or the entrance that, hey, everything is okay for you to come in. So they kind of work together.
When you are operating a store and using things like thermal sensors, somebody shows up and they are running a fever, what happens then?
Well, it's according to what their safe space policy is. And most of the products out there are configurable so that it can reflect protocols based on HR, based on facilities or operational requirements. So,
and where do those come from? Does that come from the CDC or from the company?
It comes from the company. And the company is typically following, you know, federal, state, and local guidelines as well. So, we have to rely on them to be switched on. We don't set policy. We don't guide on policy. We just have sort of the architecture that will help them configure according to their policy needs and their compliance requirements and their audit requirements.
Mm-hmm. Ben, you work a lot with QSR, and Florian showed the example of McDonald's and all the things they're doing in there. It's different over in Europe. A lot of the QSR operators in North America, if they have drive-through, 95-100% of their business is now drive-through. Yeah. But for all those other QSRs, like the Shake Shacks and everybody else that doesn't have drive-through typically, what does their future look like, and how do they handle access with 50% dining capacity and all those things? Is technology an answer for that?
I think it's an enhancement. So I think it goes back to some of your integrated solution you asked about, Dave. So imagine Chipotle, who is doing a pretty good business with the order online and pick up at store. You know, my local Chipotle, they're having me wait and queue outside. And what would be a great experience for me if there was a sign out there that had two things. One, it had a kind of an occupancy, you know, traffic light for me. It's okay, safe to enter. When's the last time they cleaned the store? You know, we're here to help you. And then the other thing is they know that I'm here. And just like, hey, Ben, welcome back. We'll be out in 3 minutes with your order. So I think there's tech solutions that can do both in terms of create a safe, you know, environment and make it seamless and frictionless, but also increase my, you know, value my time, increase my experience, enhance my experience. And so it was interesting hearing Florian talk, because I know everybody in North America, we are really, really behind in terms of opening up. And so, you know, there's going to be a lot of, and as I think as somebody said on the phone, you know, we're going to start at 25% or 50%. So it's going to be really interesting to see how these things go. I think tech can play a role. And again, I don't think it's, I could be wrong, but I don't think it's a 3 months exercise. An ongoing way. You have a chance to really enhance the customer experience.
I also wonder about the whole shopper traffic light thing. That can work quite well in a highly orderly society like Germany, but you get to the U.S. where you have people protesting about the simple fact that somebody's telling them to wear a mask. Are they going to pay any attention to a stop and go traffic light outside that will bring back the Home Depot again?
Yeah. I mean, look, you're never going to get 100% compliance. And I think there was a discussion earlier around like, well, what do you do when somebody's not in compliance, and what are your guarantees toward that and things like that? I don't think as a solutions provider, you can ever say, I can guarantee 100% of the time that people are going to obey the traffic light per se, but it is a tool, right? And it's a tool that, I think as a customer, and that I know that somebody's valuing my time, I know, and they're valuing my safety, I'm likely to adhere to. I realize here in North America, you know, we see a lot of the protests and things like that, but quite frankly, I've been amazed of how well people adhere to the social distancing and just, you know, it's like, and really followed the guidelines. I'm sure you guys have seen.
I agree.
Mobility trackers from all the locations.
Come on down to Georgia. We got a whole other thing going.
You can go bowling.
If you give people information, my point is like, if you give them the information that they can use to protect themselves and manage their life, then I think you're providing a service to your customer that way. And they can make a choice, you know, whether they enter or not.
At this point, is the ROI important, or is it just getting something in?
It's always important. Somebody mentions we're seeing the same thing in terms of constraints on capital and things like that. You know, this retail is a low margin business. It's always, every dollar is always scrutinized.
Mm-hmm. I wonder about the.
I think beyond retail, even retail and beyond is, again, where we have an opportunity as a digital signage community to provide more value than some of the other manufacturers that are really purpose-built, only strictly thermal scanning or density management. It's the integration and the ecosystem of a communications platform that's going to help these customers unlock and realize more value downstream than just strictly solving for this one thing that they're looking at right now.
Yeah, I wonder if when this all kind of broke out, there had to be any number of digital signage companies and AV companies that were thinking, oh, dear God, this is really bad. Nobody's going to be buying our stuff anymore. But as time has gone on, you start to realize how important screens are going to be moving forward, and whether they're doing one thing right now, doing access control longer term, that they're going to be communicating all the changes that are happening in a store. And Beth, in particular, you know all about how important experience is and how important reassurance is.
Reassurance, experience, and making it hands-free in a way. So the digital piece, I think we're going to see a resurgence, I think, in a different way than perhaps we have in the past. And we're excited about that, you know, to be able to pivot to keep spaces safe, but also to introduce new technology layers like voice and others, for example, to make spaces responsive, intelligent, and aware. Mm-hmm. So that, right, so that, you know, important content gets to you clearly and consistently exactly where you need it. So, you know, that's what we're spending our time thinking about, even beyond just a thermal mirror product. It's about how does our knowledge and shopper behavior and retail behavior really take the technology practices that we do and make them smarter.
Mm-hmm. I'll open this up to anybody who wants to talk about it. How, as a end user who's looking for budget from the CFO, or you're selling technology, your solutions provider, what's that message that you're bringing in to try to make the case for it? What's this going to do? And, you know, how do you secure the budget?
I think the important thing is I'm starting with a problem for the retailer. It's mm-hmm. a really, really complex thing to reopen a store or a facility. That's a really, really complex project because you have to manage processes, you have to manage your staff, you have to manage operations. So there are many, many operational things you have to consider. And when you can make the point that your technology can help them in this process of reopening, and also along further down the roads of running their business in a better way, then it's an easy sell. But if you're just trying to push some kind of technology and say, okay, this is a point solution and you need it for access control, it's going to be much tougher. It's really thinking about the retailer or the company's issues. And it's always a combination of process and technology.
And the whole thing is not limited to retail, guys, because we have a question here also. Regards to office, it's actually the same challenges we have there. Only a third of the people are allowed to go back to the office. You have to manage crowds. Elevators are a pain. Nobody knows how to manage that. And to rearrange all offices, meeting rooms don't work. They're limited to 3 or 4 people. In the past, there were 10 or 15 people there. So everything we have discussed in the past 60 minutes or 55 minutes, and you can adapt one-to-one or similar to the office world.
Yeah. Like somebody said, everything has changed. Are there any of these solutions tied to automated door systems, like other kinds of, like the things that swing open when you scan your badge?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dave. Yeah, I mentioned earlier that the software we're working with right now for our temperature testing kiosk actually does that.
So does ours.
A lot of different things.
Yeah, we've got a JavaScript engine that can interoperate with a range of platforms from, you know, email and Active Directory LDAP to visitor management systems and other software platforms, as long as there's an API exposed. Mm-hmm. And Beth already alluded to it.
Yep.
It depends on the degree to which that work has been done, and there might be, you know, a software development lift depending on the platform that we're being asked to integrate with. But that's certainly what most of these solutions are trying to solve for is automation and access
That's
control
right.
and visitor management.
That's right. And it can be enabled, again, with some programming.
Should you be intimidated when people start talking about APIs and JavaScripting and everything else that, oh, my God, this is going to be very complicated and expensive and time-consuming? Ben's shaking his head.
No.
No.
APIs is where, I mean, where we're going. Most of your content's coming, you know, that way anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just data talking to data. Mm-hmm. It's a port to a port, a hook and a hook. Mm-hmm. So we should be happy about that. That's a good thing. An API is a great thing. That's what keeps the cost low.
A lot easier to overcome than hardware.
Yes, sir. You got it. So that's a good thing.
All right.
Architecture.
We're winding down here. If I could just get a quick comment from each of you about what would be your recommendations to somebody who's being compelled to look at this or is realizing they need to look at this. What do? Where do they start? Chuck.
I found through a lot of feedback from clients that it's really important if, for example, obviously we're a manufacturer, so we manufacture one of many things, temperature testing kiosks. When you look at that, make sure you design it so it can be something else next year. Not just a one-trick pony. Mm-hmm. We really tried to do, because we don't want to waste end users' money. So I would suggest really focus on that. And what is this going to be in a year?
Jay.
Yeah, I'd say the same. And beyond that, do your homework. Make sure you're aligned with your stakeholders and factor in how these solutions are going to integrate to deliver the value that Chuck just mentioned.
Okay. Ben?
I would just add that. Is there an opportunity to make a more frictionless, seamless environment, maybe with the mobile device and things like that? Where else can you use this information?
Mm-hmm. Beth?
Be agile. Test and learn. And refine and iterate. Start small and then scale.
German guys.
Currently, we just talked about operations, and that's basically the focus and for the time, but we will change this later on. And experience are very, very important, because otherwise Amazon will win. It's what really sets brick and mortar apart. So it's really, don't forget that. Even nobody talks about it right now, but eventually we will come back to that.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.